Thanks for listening to the podcast from Faith Radio Mornings.
Start your day connecting faith to life with Faith Radio Mornings. Let it rise.
Good morning. Happy Friday, June 9th. Is school out for summer? I think it is for just about everybody. Play that one song, School's Out for Summer. I love that song. I loved it one day a year. But just the excitement when you get out of school and you go, this is the most amount of vacation I have now until I have to go back to school. And that's this day or yesterday, whatever day it was. Happy summer vacation. I don't know if there's a lot of listeners who might be teenagers. I have a feeling you're still in bed with that pizza box laying open next to your bed because you stayed up way too late last night, which you deserve to do. And if you've got a graduation coming up, happy graduation. What an important, significant, joyful time in your life. That if you are listening and you are graduating, way to go. You made it through high school. And now the next chapter begins, and that's college or trade school or whatever you have plans to do. We just want to love you and support you because the next chapter of life is not going to be as easy. Because I say high school can be a pretty charmed time of life. It can be. Now it's also a very difficult time for many. And if you had a rough time, maybe you're glad it's over. Not everybody has a good experience, and it's been a while since I went to high school, so it's hard to say what high school is like nowadays, but it can be challenging for sure. All right, word of the day has already been spoken by my last guest, John Malcolm, the words panoply. Of course, I had to race to the dictionary to look it up, just to double check. A complete or impressive collection of things, that's what it means, a complete or impressive collection of things, because I started earlier with my day, my word of the day being squinty, which is eyes partially open, which probably pretty well fits any morning that you're getting started and you're getting your day going. And then I found out, Rebecca, you said that squinty was referred to little ground squirrels.
Yes.
We call them chipmunks around here.
Yes, and but in some places of the world, including Des Moines, where I lived for several years, they refer to chipmunks or the little ground squirrels as squinnies.
I have never heard that up until today.
I hadn't until I moved there.
Well, I've never even heard the word squinny until today, until it popped up in my email as my word of the day.
We're just learning all kinds of things today.
This is the place you come to learn.
I think so, yes.
Yes.
Everyone now, take note.
Speaking of learning something meaningful, I'd like to pick up my Bible and read Isaiah 42, verse 8. Let this one sink in. 42, verse 8. I am the Lord, that is my name. I will not give glory to another or praise to idols. Dun, 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 dun.
No, that's
solid, isn't it?
It is solid. It is somber.
Should I read it
again?
It is
an excellent reminder. I like it. Let's do it.
I'll read it again. I am the Lord. That is my name. I will not give my glory to another or my praise to idols. That's the God we serve.
And that's the God whose body we have. He's with us. We are his temple.
Yes.
And so that, I think, makes the whole concept of idolatry, you're putting another thing or person in God's spot, all the more serious. That's pretty convicting right now.
Mm-hmm. I love a good paradox. So I think we go from that to talking about the movie Wonder Woman with Adam Holtz. So we'll take a short break and be back. Adam is on the studio line. Thanks for being with us this morning, 7 minutes after the hour. Absolutely so glad you're listening. We just love you. Good morning and happy Friday, 9 minutes after the hour. You got some time if you have to be at work at the top of the hour. Eat that breakfast. Make sure you start with a good breakfast. They always say that's the most important meal of the day. So start with at least a side of bacon just to get things started. All right. I have Adam Holtz on the studio line. Adam is from Plugged In Ministries. Adam, good morning.
Good morning, Bill.
Have you had your side of bacon yet?
I haven't, but I grew up near Des Moines, and I don't ever remember hearing the word squinny. So far be it for me to argue with Rebecca, but I'm still thinking about that.
I've never heard of squinty either. You know,
maybe it's just a South Side thing.
Yeah,
it's just a South Side.
I always thought it was chipmunk too, and then I heard ground squirrel. I go, what? Right? Ground squirrel? What is that?
Anyway, not to gobble up our time with something.
Oh, this is very important, Adam. This is extremely important stuff that we're talking about. All right, okay, Wonder Woman. It's going nuts, isn't it?
It is, and you know, for once, and it seems like it's been a long time since we've been able to say this, this is a movie that presents a superhero as pretty heroic. And we'll talk about some of the maybe caveats with Wonder Woman here in a minute. But, you know, it seems like ever since Christopher Nolan's Dark Knight trilogy came out, you know, over the last decade or so, everybody's tried to rebottle that magic. And it was dark, it was gritty, it was really a reboot on the entire idea of what a superhero should be on the big screen. So, you know, we've now had another Batman reboot, we've had Superman, and those DC movies have really underwhelmed with critics and with fans. And it seems like Wonder Woman almost seems like a reboot of the reboot.
Oh, funny.
In that it tells her story again, and she's really heroic. She's not one of these gritty anti-heroes. She is somebody who cares about virtue. She cares about right and wrong. She's a hero that we can really sort of get behind. So on those levels, this feels like a really different kind of DC superhero movie than we have seen recently.
Mm-hmm. And we like the star, don't we? Gal Gadot, is that her name?
Yeah, and I think it actually, even though I had 5 years of French, I think they actually pronounce the hard T. I think it's Gal Gadot.
Wow.
Gadot.
Gadot, huh?
So there you go.
Yeah.
That's your pronunciation fun fact on the star today.
what do we know about her, though? Wasn't she a former Miss Israel?
She was a former Miss Israel, and the fact that she is an Israeli has been a point of contention, I think, in Lebanon and some places that have refused to screen the movie because of her ethnic heritage, which just seems kind of ridiculous to me, but obviously ridiculous things happen all over the world every day, so usually they don't consult me.
And she was also a former member of the Israeli military, if I have that correct?
Yeah, I think that's right, too. I haven't studied her backstory probably in that level of depth, but I know that that's basically a requirement if you grow up in
mm-hmm.
Israel.
Mm-hmm. So she brings some pretty useful tools to the role, doesn't she?
Right. No, she was already sort of a proto Wonder Woman before she even took this role.
Right. Right. All right. Let's talk about some of the things we need to be careful about regarding this movie.
Well, there is sort of the implication that she and the male lead end up sleeping together, but it's handled pretty discreetly, but that's obviously sort of something people need to be aware of, and maybe one of the ways in which this movie is less than heroic. The movie presents her as being created by her mother, Hippolyta, I believe is her name, and then sort of having life breathed into this sculpture by Zeus. So we've got a lot of Greek mythology, and, you know, there are Christian families out there for whom any kind of spirituality other than Christianity is kind of a big red flag, and then mm-hmm. there are a lot of Christian families that I think look at it through the lens of this is mythology and this is navigable. I think even apart from the Greek spiritual trappings here, though, we really get a story about virtue and courage and self-sacrifice that, while not a Christian story, certainly has echoes in the gospel. So I don't think it's a big leap for parents to be able to draw some parallels between those spiritual subjects and the spirituality in the movie, even though on the surface, you know, we're not dealing with a Christian movie at all here. And,
right.
And there's a smattering of profanity, and it's set in World War I. And
okay.
In some ways, it's a pretty grim look at the reality of warfare. And the interesting thing that the movie does is Ares, the god of war, is kind of one of the villains here. And Wonder Woman, Princess Diana, who turns into Diana Prince when she comes into the human world,
mm-hmm.
She has sort of this black and white thinking about humanity is good and Ares is bad, and if you can just get Ares out of the picture, everything will be okay again. And she's sort of disabused of that notion and comes to see that there really is a moral gradient here, and sometimes the evil in humanity comes from humanity, not from some outside source. And again, there's a spiritual parallel in that we have a spiritual enemy who is very much at work. But because we live in a fallen world, we're capable of doing really evil things too. And so the movie really deals with that, again, not from a Christian perspective, but sort of parsing the subtleties of evil and our ability to commit it, which is pretty interesting.
Mm-hmm. How much did you enjoy the movie yourself?
Okay, Bill, here's my true confession.
Okay.
I have not yet seen it.
Okay.
So
no, I get that.
I've talked at length with my guys and my wife, and I are hoping to go see it tonight, actually.
That's awesome. Yeah. Now, would you take your kids, or are they too young?
I think they're too young.
Okay.
I think this is still a PG-13 movie for a reason. Even just the warfare imagery is enough that I think I would really pause if your kids are younger than 13 before taking them to this. Now, relative to a lot of the other superhero stuff, it probably is not as problematic, but there's still enough content here to be pretty thoughtful and discerning about whether your kids are ready to see that or not.
Mm-hmm. Adam, I want to take a break. When we come back, I want to talk about the movie Megan Levy. And
yeah.
I first have to go look
which
for a
box. Which I did see, but I can talk about that.
I first have to go look for a box of Kleenex, though. Anytime you talk about a dog involved in a movie,
yep.
I get weepy. All right. 16
yeah,
minutes.
That's what'll do it.
Yeah, 16 minutes after the hour. I'll be back in a minute. More with Adam Holtz from Plugged In Ministries. Good morning, 18 minutes after the hour. Bill Arnold here. It's movie time with Adam Holtz from Plugged In Ministries. We're talking about what's going on over the weekend with movies, what's already hit the movies, what's coming out. And we just wrapped up our conversation with Wonder Woman. You certainly have me intrigued. I think that is one I might go see. And shifting now to Megan Levy. It's a story of a heroic soldier and a military dog. And I watched the trailer, Adam, and I got to tell you, there were tears coming down my face.
Yeah, you know, it sort of is, it splits the difference between Saving Private Ryan and Lassie, which seems like an odd mashup.
Yeah, that's quite a combo, by the way.
What's that?
That's quite a combo.
It is. It's actually not as explicit as Saving Private Ryan, but it is a war movie.
Uh-huh.
It's set in the Iraq War in 2001, and Megan Levy has fairly recently graduated from high school. She has an alcohol problem. She's not doing well in life, and she enlists in the Marines sort of with a degree of self-awareness that she needs to make a change. Well,
okay.
Things don't really go well there either, and she ends up getting punished by cleaning the doggy latrine, and there she meets Rex.
Mm.
And Rex is a bomb-sniffing service dog with an attitude. He has bitten his previous handler and broken his hand, and Megan manages to get into the program, ends up in Iraq with him. Some difficult things happen there, and then they're back stateside, and she wants to adopt the dog and runs into all sort of obstacles about that. So
mm-hmm.
First half of the movie is kind of a war movie in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm.
Second half is about her battle stateside to readjust to life after the war, after being wounded, and trying to be able to adopt this dog that she fell in love with.
Mm-hmm. Adam, how educational is this movie in terms of seeing how service dogs are used in wartime situations? Because I think most people have a fascination with bomb-sniffing dogs.
Yeah.
Every time I see one at the airport, I always think, wow, these are very cool trained animals. These very interesting.
Yeah, you know, I think that there's some education here. I don't know how accurate it is, but we do see them going through all kinds of training at Camp Pendleton, which I think is that near San Diego?
San Diego, yes.
Is that right?
Yes, San Diego.
And we see them learning, you know, how to sniff things out. And then when they get to Iraq, I think the thing that was informational for me is at one point one of the characters says they're on the front lines of the front lines. And really, Megan and Rex walk straight into this war zone, and they're the first ones out there, and they're just kind of wide open, and we watch as Rex sniffs for buried bombs on a roadway, and he sniffs out tons of them. And so they really are heroic in that they're stepping into places that quite literally are a minefield, and it's up to the dog and the handler to be able to identify where these mines and explosives might be buried. And so I didn't know that. I felt like in that sense it was a very informational movie.
Mm-hmm. And did you end up with some tears down your cheek?
You know, I did a little bit. I mean, it is a movie at the end that kind of gets to you.
Okay.
Often when I'm taking notes, I may not be quite as emotional as if I were just watching a movie.
Right.
Not doing it for my job. But I thought emotionally it was a very resonant movie, and I really liked it. Now, that said, I think the caveats for this PG-13 movie are there's a fair bit of violence, and for some, there's enough language here, including some misuses of God's and Jesus' name, that
okay. If
that's something that you're sensitive to, definitely need to be aware of that. And again, different Christians have different sensitivities to that. Some might just say, well, that's how people talk during wartime, which is probably true. And yet others might feel like, oh, man, I wish they wouldn't have gone that far in terms of that content.
Mm-hmm. I never like hearing the Lord's name in vain, ever.
Oh.
But, I mean, that's...
There are several uses of it here, so,
yeah.
You know, just beware of
no,
that.
No, okay. But I know we can't do any spoilers here. Of course, I have thoughts in my head as to, you know, the Rex, the dog, and if Rex makes
yeah.
it and all that. So I don't want you to say anything because that's a spoiler, but...
Right.
I was so moved by the trailer. I thought this looks like a movie that would be something that would be interesting. And then also,
yeah.
I'm just curious if the kids would be able to handle this passion and emotion between the handler and the dog.
Well, I think they could handle that.
Okay.
And again, I think because it is PG-13, it's actually a similar sort of situation as Wonder Woman in that. I don't think this is a movie that teens or adults would have any problems with really at all. But for younger kids, it is pretty intense. There's some combat. There are some casualties. And I think that those are things. And then with the language, and then there's one scene of, you know, implying that Megan is in bed with a guy that she falls in love with. And so those are content concerns that, again, I would take pretty seriously as a parent. If you've got a younger child that wants to go. Now, I think the one exception there might be if you're a military family and you want to, you know, help them understand this is what it's like when daddy ships off to Iraq or Afghanistan.
Mm-hmm.
It's navigable. I don't think it's you know, by all means, don't do it. But I think that the inspirational stuff goes hand in paw, if you will, with some of the wartime content issues that we see displayed on the big screen.
Yeah. Or mommy shipped off to Afghanistan.
Or mommy shipped off. That's
yeah, of course.
Exactly right.
Of course.
So.
All right. Speaking of mommy, let's go to the mummy.
The mummy. Oh, the mummy. Tom Cruise, Universal. They're trying to reboot the classic monster franchises, and this is supposed to be the first one. The mummy's kind of a mess, Bill, really any way you want to look at it. It's a big budget CGI spectacle, and if you've seen the trailers, you know, there's this really creepy looking sort of undead goddess that does bad things, and it's kind of crazy. Basically, she is a character who made a deal with Set, who is an Egyptian god of death, who's kind of like a Lucifer character, and she's been buried in the desert for 5,000 years, and Tom Cruise is a sort of Indiana Jones type character who unwittingly unleashes her on the world, and then she decides Tom's good looking enough to make her partner and wants to have Set animate his body. And if all that sounds like a convoluted mess, both from a story perspective and a spiritual perspective, it is. you know, from a plugged in perspective, you've got violence, you've got, a fair bit of sensuality, profanity. I mean, basically everything that we've come to expect in a big-budget PG-13 action movie these days, unfortunately. But even apart from that, the secular critics have raked it over the coals, too, and just said the mummy is wrapped up in all sorts of problems.
Okay. Adam, I appreciate it, and I will talk to you again in a week or so, and we can talk about more movies, and I'll probably have seen Wonder Woman by then, so we can chat about that a little bit some more. Have a great
Definitely
weekend.
Both. Thank you.
Yep, you bet. 26 minutes after the hour, we'll take a short break. And then when we come back, we're going to talk to Chris Martin, the millennial evangelical. And we're also going to chat with David Aikman a little bit about what's going on in the UK. Be back in a minute. It is 30 minutes after the hour. We're going to take a little break for news. But when we come back, we're going to talk to Chris Martin, our friend who is the millennial evangelical. And then we're going to talk to David Aikman, our British foreign policy expert, on what's going on in the UK. Be back in a minute.
Faith and life together.
I was just scanning the radio, and Pastor Colin was on, and I heard his voice start speaking about Jesus, and I stopped at that station, and ever since then, it's been about 9 months. It's literally like the only station I listen to. Now, thank you for the station and all the word that you spread to.
It is 25 minutes until the top of the hour. No matter what your life experience has been, joy is still possible for you, even if you grew up in a joyless home. Kay Warren says joy is still to come.
Again, it's an external, and it can't be an excuse for us to say, well, I didn't see it modeled. I didn't live with a home that had a lot of joy. In fact, I lived with the reverse of that, and then somehow think that joy is outside of our reach. When we think that joy is outside of our reach, that can be a really bleak place to be. And to understand that the people in the Bible who represent joy to us, who teach us about joy, whose lives are examples of joy, many of them did not have good circumstances. They had a lot of pain. They had a lot of struggles. And yet they were able to choose joy. And I think that Jesus' life is probably such a great example of that. Jesus suffered greatly, and yet he was a man of joy. And that gives me hope. It gives me hope. It's like, okay, so my circumstances don't have to have been perfect. My life doesn't have to have been perfect. I don't have to have had, you know, the most amazing circumstances before I, too, can access a life of joy.
What a great truth to be reminding each other about. I need to be reminded myself about a life of joy. If you want to hear that full interview, go to myfaithradio.com, search Choosing Joy, and there it will be. That is Kay Warren. She's the co-founder of Saddleback Church and an author. We'll take a short break, and when we come back, I've got Chris Martin coming to us via Skype.
When disrespect in your team rears its ugly head, it's time to make sure everyone understands the rules for fighting fair. Hi, I'm Mark Gregston with Parenting Today's Teens. Disagreements are a natural and important part of healthy relationships, but teens need to learn how to argue with respect. So if you've got a disrespectful teenager at home, here's the kind of message you can deliver. We love you, and that will never change, but we won't allow you to talk to us that way anymore. We understand your need to argue your opinion, but there's a better way to do it. So from now on, disrespectful words or actions will not be tolerated, and we'll throw in some extra consequences to boot. Make sure your teen clearly understands that you're willing to listen, but you're not a punching bag. Someday, he will thank you.
Find more parenting help from Mark Gregston when you go online to parentingtodaysteens.org.
It is 38 minutes after the hour. I'm talking to Chris Martin. He's coming to us via Skype. We think of him as the millennial evangelical, also blogs for Lifeway Research. Chris, good morning.
Hey, good morning. How are you, man?
I'm good. Say, okay, social media, big black hole. We got to get smarter about navigating. I think you got something to say.
Yeah.
On that one.
Yeah, for sure. Social media is kind of a scary beast at times. Like I said, like you kind of just described, I described it as a black hole in my blog post. It's this sort of like mysterious gravitational force that just kind of absorbs everything around of it at a frightening speed. But because of this, it can be really scary to start a blog or be very active on social media. I've been active on social media for a long time. I mean, since I was in like middle school or, you know, back when MySpace was the thing. And on my blog, which is about millennials, I write about social media a lot because it really kind of fits the theme of the blog, believe it or not, which I'm sure is easy to connect those dots. But my blog, ever since I started it just over 3 years ago now, is to the purpose of it is to help pastors and church leaders better understand millennials, reach unbelieving millennials in their communities, and equip the believing millennials in their churches for gospel ministry. And so learning how to use social media is a big part of that, obviously, which is why I spent a lot of time writing about it. But so now, you know, as we've talked about here a number of times, I'm out of school now, so I have a little bit of free time on my hands. I'm beginning this sort of new side project that won't replace the millennial thing by any means, but is kind of – my hope is to help Christians better engage on social media. So my vision for Christians on social media is pretty simple. I think God's gifted us in a variety of ways. He's gifted many of us with the ability to communicate effectively and clearly. And one of the ways we can use this gift is in the digital space, so blogging, social media, things like that. But many Christians are active in the digital space creating content that points people to Jesus. Only some of us are active on social media. Some of us are blogging, but don't necessarily hang out on social media platforms like Twitter, for instance. But a good number of us do kind of do both. And I do that. A bunch of my friends do that. At Lifeway, which is my day job, mm-hmm. my job is to help I work with about 15 or 20 authors, and my job is to help, of which, you know, we've talked about Bruce Ashford before. I work with him through Lifeway.
Yes.
And I work with 15 to 20 authors, and I help connect them with their audiences online.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not, you know, some people might be thinking, you know, oh, well, so you're marketing books. Not really. You know, there are book marketers whose job is to, you know, have a marketing campaign for a book. That's not really my job. My job is to help authors connect with their audiences in between book releases. So providing value for audience, you know, if someone releases a book, you know, our mutual friend Bruce, you know, he's released a few books in the last few years. He'll have someone help him, you know, market that book, his new book when it comes out. But right now I'm kind of helping him just write good content that's, you know, that's interesting that you would want to talk to him about, for instance,
mm-hmm.
and to just serve his audience. I really see Christians on social media, especially authors on social media, as a means of service, not self-promotion.
Okay. I like that.
So people like Bruce Ashford using his gifts on social media, not just to, you know, retire at age 45 and because he's sold a million books or anything like that, but because I think a guy like Bruce has a unique skill set and gift set that God has given him. And I think that he can serve the church by using those gifts in the digital space. So mm-hmm. that's kind of my day job. And what I'm going to do kind of as a side project is start helping not just 15 to 20 authors, but whoever wants to, you know, whether it's, you know, someone who runs a radio show like yours, or someone who does social media work for a Christian nonprofit, or a prospective author, someone who might want to become an author, but doesn't really know how to do the digital thing very well and knows that's an important part, or perhaps a church who needs some social media help. Maybe it's a smaller church that doesn't have, you know, a communications person on staff.
Mm-hmm.
So my goal is to just, you know, I love serving these, you know, 15 to 20 authors that I work with in any given week. I love serving them because I see it as ultimately I'm serving them and they're serving the church. So I'm kind of serving the church through them in a way.
Mm-hmm.
The kind of new project that I'm going to be talking about more on my blog, but also just in conversation with people or on my social media channels, is kind of just kind of scaling that to a larger scale and trying to help more than just 15 or 20 authors use their gifts that God has given them on social media, but helping as many people as are interested
mm-hmm.
Use their gifts. So yeah, that's kind of a new little side fun project that I've got going on.
Yeah. Well, Chris, I want to tap into a little bit of coaching from you today, and maybe you can give us a couple tips, maybe two tips to better disciple millennials. So how about one tip per minute for the next 2 minutes?
Sure. So first tip, discipling millennials, not social media related, to be clear.
Okay.
First, coach millennials before you condemn them. So obviously it's not wrong to convict someone of sin. You know, if you're discipling a young person, there's going to be a time where you likely have to convict them of a sin. But I think coming alongside a millennial in a sort of coaching tone is going to be more effective than condemning them. So think of yourself more as a supporter than an accuser.
Okay.
Secondly, ask before you tell. As you're leading someone to believe in or become more like Jesus, you'll necessarily have to provide some clear, direct instruction, obviously. But sometimes it's more effective to ask leading questions to approach the heart of an issue. Like, why do you think you responded the way you did in a situation where that perhaps they lashed out in anger? That may be more effective than being angry is a sin. You need to repent.
Mm-hmm.
So just kind of using
more
tact
fun to say,
in conversation. You're right. But no one may be listening to you when you say it that way. So those are just a couple quick tips to disciple millennials.
So we need to make sure we try to do some coaching and not condemn right away, but just coach. And then make sure you ask questions. I think that's always a good reminder whenever we're having a conversation with anybody about anything, when you use your two ears to listen first and seek information. I think that was one of the principles in Stephen Covey's book. Seek first to understand before being understood. I think that's an important reminder.
It's huge, yes.
Yeah.
In any conversation.
In any conversation. Yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah. All right, Chris, you're the best. Thanks for being with us today. Have a great weekend.
No problem, man. You too.
Right.
Talk to you guys.
Yep. We'll take a short break, and when we come back, we're going to talk to Dr. David Aikman. We're going to just get his take on what's going on in the UK right now. I'll be back in a minute. Minutes until the top of the hour. Bill Arnold with you this morning. I know I'm having a good week when I get to speak to Dr. David Aikman twice in one week. He is back on our studio line, ready and willing to weigh in on what's going on in the UK right now. Good morning, David.
Good morning, Bill. Thank you for having me back on the program.
Of course. Now, Theresa May is getting calls to resign. What are your thoughts?
Well, I think if she doesn't resign in the next few days, she'll have to resign before too long, because she is operating in a government that has only got a chance of surviving through the votes of Democratic Union MPs from Northern Ireland.
Mm-hmm.
And the rebuff that she received in this election was really staggering. Jeremy Corbyn, hitherto not very popular, considered loony left candidate of the Labour Party, emerged as a very articulate opponent to Conservative policies, and he hung out a lot of policies in the Labour camp and the Labour manifesto that attracted not just very large numbers of students, but a number of the older voters who traditionally vote Conservative, because the Conservative manifesto threatened to put at risk the supplements to the National Health Service pension that some of these old folks survive on. And then, of course, she made several tactical mistakes. First of all, in calling the election in the first place, several days after several interviews in which she had said there would not be a snap election. Then she changes her mind, called the snap election, and assumes that she's going to get a robust, improved majority, and it just doesn't happen. And she completely ruined the campaigning by refusing to take part in any debates, either with Jeremy Corbyn or with the other party leaders. It really was really a disastrous performance from the Conservative point of view.
Now, David, I think I read that she went to the Queen and is trying to get permission to assemble a coalition government. They kind of call that horse trading, where you gather up smaller parties and then you try to get them into your coalition. Would you explain how that works and that strategy? I've never heard of that before.
Well, what she has to do, she needs to have a technical majority in the parliament of 650 people. She needs to have the support of 325 members of parliament. And she didn't get that in the Conservative Party results at all. She fell short. So she's been trying to do a deal with the Northern Irish Conservative Party, the Democratic Union Party, who generally have voted pro-conservative, but they have a whole bunch of agenda items that the English population may not be particularly pleased to deal with.
For example,
she's put herself in a very vulnerable position.
Yeah. What are some of those? Oh, I'm sorry, David.
Well, of course, one of the things that they want is they don't want a hard border with Southern Ireland as a result of the Brexit negotiations. They want a soft border relationship, which is much more advantageous to trade and so forth.
Okay. And then does the DUP party in Northern Ireland? Am I saying that correctly?
Yes, it's the DUP, Democratic Unionist Party.
Okay.
And our pro-conservative MPs and their opponents in the Northern Irish Parliament at Stormont are Sinn Féin, or the Irish Republican sympathizers.
And they're...
So it's a very hazardous situation that Theresa May is in. And frankly, I don't know whether it's stubbornness or terrific courage that she's continuing on. I guess history will have to vindicate her somehow or other.
Do you consider her a good politician?
Well, I generally have. I mean, I can't fault her on what she's done in the past as Home Secretary and then as Prime Minister. But I think I would falter seriously, as many observers here would do, on calling this election in the first place and being very arrogant in running the Conservative platform. And Labour was really able to poke many holes in it and hold her up to ridicule because she wouldn't take part in debates.
David, what direction would Jeremy Corbyn take it?
Well, Jeremy Corbyn has pledged to support the Brexit movement because, of course, Brexit won in a national referendum. But his social policies would seriously change the structure of England and of the United Kingdom. And many people were attracted by the fact that he had big increases for old age pensions, free college education for everybody in the UK. I mean, this was a sort of socialist utopia in a way, but he articulated it in a sense that it didn't sound like pie in the sky, at least didn't sound like pie in the sky to young voters or to the old folks who deserted the Conservatives.
David, I want to always thank you for your excellent wisdom and analysis, and most importantly, your kindness and friendship to Faith Radio.
Well, thank you so much for inviting me. I'm always delighted to be on.
Well, it's always nice to get you twice in 1 week, especially on your birthday week. So I hope you had a great day. I'll talk to you soon again, David. Thanks.
Thank you so much, Bill.
Yep.
Right. Bye-bye.
5 minutes until the top of the hour. We'll take a short break and be right back. It is 4 minutes until the top of the hour. What a wonderful program we've had today. A lot of great guests. And I think the Federal Bureau of Investigation, the FBI, should change its name to the FBM, the Federal Bureau of Matters. That's kind of an odd investigation we've got going on, isn't it?
It says everything and nothing.
Which is perfect. Absolutely perfect. And if you are looking for a job, may I make a recommendation, please? Thank you, Bill. Go ahead. Here's a job that's guaranteed to be kind of interesting. Mondelez International, it's an owner of popular brands such as Oreo, Chips Ahoy, and Cadbury, is looking for a chocolate tester. The key responsibilities include being able to taste chocolate and cocoa beverage products and give objective and honest feedback. How about this feedback? Me like chocolate.
I think I found my calling.
What do you think about this product? Me like chocolate.
That is nuanced, Bill. I think you should apply.
And here's something that's quite redundant. Applicants must have a passion for confectionery and taste buds for detection and be eager to try new innovative products.
Who doesn't? Are there people out there that just, oh, no, I don't like cookies. I'm sorry.
I don't know.
I mean, I suppose you could, and I'm sure I'll hear from all two of them
in the
next 20 minutes.
So as we wrap up our discussion on squinnies, what have you heard from your camp?
Yes. This was a very vital question that we addressed. I said that squinnies are the name for chipmunks or brown squirrels in Des Moines. And I put up a Facebook poll for all my Des Moines friends because I needed the backup. And it's true that lots of people in Des Moines, but not a lot of other places in Iowa, interestingly enough.
Ah.
And not every person in Des Moines, obviously. It's not monolithic. We have some diversity. But it's a squinny is what they call little ground squirrels.
Yeah, well,
I don't know why.
We started off the day with squinny as being just a word that when you're squinting your eyes a little bit, which is kind of how you feel first thing in the morning at 6 o'clock.
And that makes sense.
As you're looking for the coffee pot.
Yeah. I don't know if someone thought that chipmunks looked like that or maybe they just couldn't remember what Disney called the chipmunks, and so they made up their own.
I don't know. All I know is it's Friday, and we're going to take a weekend. And then when we come back on Monday, we're going to have a little few tweaks to the show. Be very exciting.
It's very exciting.
Can't wait. So tune in Monday morning. Make sure you hear some of the changes. Have a great weekend. God bless. Be back Monday.
Thanks for listening to this Faith Radio Mornings podcast. These conversations are available because of listener support. You can make your gift now at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of Faith Radio Mornings, subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or on your podcast player. And thanks for sharing the audio link with a friend and growing the impact of Faith Radio Mornings.